unless it's integral to the story, we just have to assume that they're doing all that stuff on their own time. We have to assume that when we're not watching the Avengers take people out, Thor is on Tinder, swiping left, swiping right to find romance. But since it's not integral to the story, we don't see it.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Breaking the Panel, where we discuss comics, everything from the back bins to the big screen and everything in between. This week, we've got Charles, the rock god of podcasting, our TLDR host.
Yeah!
We've got the great Bay, Brian Ibbett.
Oh, jeez. That better be Bay like Beyonce or Michael Bay.
My boo.
It most definitely is not, sir. We've got the KWIM Paul Klotz.
What does that even mean?
Know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
And nice. As always, we got the Dillagaff Chris Wisdom.
That was a great setup of Klotz. I award you, sir. I honor you, sir. That was amazing. I loved it.
Good. Hey, I want to let you know that we've kind of done a disservice to our fans. We want to apologize up front, and we want to give a little love to people that have been sending in some messages, and we want to get to that. So first one comes back from back of September 4th. It was after you guys had done the interview or done the episode where you talked about YouTube. YouTube and Star Trek and shutting down the fan works.
Right.
The cease and desist order. So this comes from Jeffrey James. He said, "Gentlemen, great podcast as usual. Before I get to my main point, my main concern about Zendaya as Mary Jane is that she's never shown any acting chops of which I'm aware. That being said, I agree that Marvel usually makes savvy casting decisions. What threw me off is at the end of the podcast where you discussed copyright and insisted that media companies have to get with the times. Let me explain about copyright and why your perception of it is fundamentally mistaken." Ooh, this is going to be interesting. I'm an artist, guys. All right. First, though, some background. I have a bit of experience working with intellectual IP owners, intellectual property IP owners to bring fan content to an audience since I created Borg War, the first non-satire fan film to be shown at an official Star Trek convention in 2006.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
To make that showing possible, I worked with John Van Sitters, CBS's fan management guy, and CBS Legal. During that experience, I had the opportunity to listen and learn about their concerns about copyright and fan content. Within big companies, there are two primary issues. First, that they are concerned that if they allow people to use their content, they may lose control of that content, thus allowing it to slip into the public domain, which would represent billions of dollars of loss. Second, they are busy pursuing their own vision for that content and see fan-based content as possibly distracting from that content. The Star Trek relaunch is a case in point. CBS recently tightened restrictions on fan content to support the relaunch. Of less importance, but still of issue, is the fact that IP owners, well, own the property and as such do not look kindly on other people making money on it, any more than you might look kindly on someone cutting down the tree in your yard for firewood. You may not like the restrictions that IP owners put on their property, but that is the nature of property. Technically speaking, Marvel could make Infinity War and charge $1 million per ticket or release it for free. It's their property to do with as they wish. Now, you may think that their decisions around fan content are stupid and counterproductive, but that's not your decision. It's not your right to decide whether they need free advertising or that a certain bit of fan content should be available. You see, copyright is exactly as it sounds. If you hold the copyright, then you and only you have the right to make a copy. Therefore, there are exceptions in the case of fair use for reviews. That's a gray area, but it doesn't cover fan-created content. By and large, media companies have been reasonably flexible about fan content, such as CBS and Borg War, considering, and this is important, media companies lose millions of dollars every year to bootlegging and piracy. So, while YouTube's algorithm might seem to you to be a bit heavy-handed, it's in response to widespread theft, which reduces the profitability of those companies and makes them less able to bring out new content. This may not seem important to you, but I assure you that the theft of a copyrighted IP is definitely represented by the long list of people credited at the end of your favorite movies, many of whom are freelancers who depend on these big projects to feed their families. Again, please don't take this as a criticism of the podcast, which was entertaining. It's just I couldn't let those misconceptions slip by without putting in my proverbial two cents.
All All right, I want to jump in. So he's actually crash coursing here, because we did talk about the Star Trek thing. And while I definitely understand that they hold the copyright and there's been some back and forth about people making movies, this and that, the other one, that has nothing to do with piracy at all. And two, there big projects are being made on Netflix. You know, big projects are being made on Hulu. Big projects are being made all the time. But when you start talking about what we said with YouTube, that was not the same. Klotz had brought up the fact that somebody was using still photos that were actual press release photos to talk about an episode to build interest in actually watching the show. And that is not the same as making a fan film, right? So that was the two different aspects that we're talking about here.
I don't recall us talking about fan films for like more than a year or so, but because there was some hubbub a while back about a Punisher fan film that got made and then got pulled.
There was one we talked about more recent that CBS took. It started with an A. I can't think of it now, but took this larger fan group to court, and I don't remember what the results were.
Okay, I might have missed that episode. I apologize.
No, that's fine. It's fine. But
I thought you guys had talked about it in that episode, just as in.
I don't remember.
I don't think we've ever talked the full story.
Right, but as far as the was it The Walking Dead that was the one, or Fear the Walking Dead? It's Fear the Walking Dead. So what we were talking about with YouTube was not people making fan content, but people actually doing shows about the show to get people to come, and he got a cease and desist because he used press release photos of the episode, not, from what I understand, not video. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, if I can jump in here. Yeah. First of all, thank you for the letter, or well, the
absolutely. We got another comment to come after this.
And I appreciate. I want to get this out of the way first because I'm going to respond to this. I appreciate the criticism and the attempt to educate. I want to say that from my perspective, I don't think that I was ever out of touch with the, you know, the core concepts illustrated in this entry here. But what we were talking about in regards to YouTube was the fact that there are people who generate content where they review or critique or, you know, talk about, much like our show, talk about what's going on with that content, with that show. And the issue was that YouTube had an automated, or YouTube has a service that, or a function that searches for copyright infringement, and it flags a lot of content. But in the case of Fear the Walking Dead, somebody at AMC, presumably, was like when they were, because the way it works is when you get flagged, you submit a review. You know, you say, hey, I don't think that I should have gotten flagged for this because I wasn't using your clips. I wasn't stealing your content. I was literally, you know, in the case of this, the gentleman we were talking about, he was literally just using their press stills, you know, to talk about what was going on in a review and critique, which is fair use. And they were denying it when it was submitted. So that means that there was a human being on the other end of that that was saying, nope, either they didn't watch it and didn't care, or they're just blanket denying anybody that was getting hit like that. We could go on talking about YouTube, because YouTube just recently rolled out a whole nother fiasco for content producers. I mean, I'm going to go on record right now and say that I don't think YouTube is the future anymore. I think YouTube's relatively recent implementation of policy and ideas has made it increasingly hard for content producers to do so on their platform and have it still be viable for them as a way of, you know, of having some income.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I was going to say, I completely understand that why a copyright holder would want to protect their, you know, their IP, why they would want to protect the, you know, how that IP is perceived, at least to a certain degree within realms of their control. I find the language in this response kind of interesting, where he says it's not our decision. I get that, but at the same time, I think that's part of the problem, is that copyright and intellectual property law is admittedly by, I think, just about everybody who's involved with it. I've seen plenty of comments in articles from lawyers and people with a legal background talking about how it's a nightmare. I mean, in some ways, it's hyper-conservative in the favor of the IP owner, the copyright holder, and in other ways, it is incredibly loose And you know what I mean? Like, so there's workarounds.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nightmare, I think, to manage, to be aware of any sort of misuse, any sort of infringements. I think that the law itself is needed just to protect works, you know, is just
sure.
But I don't think, but I think it's the maintenance of that stuff that is the nightmare. So you're on the right track with that.
I think it's one of those things where when we regulate things, we often try to regulate it so completely that we have firm control of what's going on. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of, and then you have situations that arise that don't really fit in the mold. And it just, I'm going to put it plainly, there's a lot of times where there's quote unquote copyright infringement that obviously is an infringement. But as it was mentioned in this letter, and as I've mentioned before, it's very important for a copyright holder to prove that they're defending their copyright on a regular basis.
Right. Exactly. You
know, when someone
channels, as opposed to being the other way around.
Right. Well, because their concern absolutely is.
Yeah. I mean, if you can prove that they didn't argue a copyright case that they knew about. In other words, let's say they saw, oh, somebody on YouTube is using that 5-second snippet of Rick telling Carl to get in the house as a joke. And we don't get on. And if they don't get on them for that, then that does open it up for other people to say, okay, well, you didn't go after them. So that now becomes part of the public domain. It's now, there's precedence for you allowing that content that you knew about from this example. And that's what makes it super, super hard to defend.
And that honestly is a problem, is we have a system that needs to be revamped. We're in a new media age. I don't even know what you would call it. Maybe it's the media age, because you have the industrial age, right? You got then we had the information age in the 90s when the internet was invented. Where are we now? I mean, we're in a whole new area that new laws have to be made. It has to be changed because we're forcing these companies. Because I'm with you. I get that. CBS created this. CBS could lose millions of dollars and control over their property if they don't do certain things. But we're forcing them to have a clenched fist, as in holding tight, not to threaten to punch us, which... I mean, the other way to do that, but
CBS does a good job of losing millions of dollars over Star Trek.
Well, and I wasn't on the show, and I'm not as educated in this field as you guys, but I guess I would say that there's distinct differences in IP holders and the way they handle this. Like, let's just look at two similar properties right now, Star Trek versus Star Wars. I mean, yearly, Star Wars goes to the point where they don't have to. You don't have to go to CBS and meet with people to get your film, your fan film made. They have a contest yearly that promotes their fans making these films, because they know this isn't going to hurt our bottom line. This isn't going to steal billions of dollars from us. This is going to make the hype for Episode 7 and Rogue One ridiculous.
There's a difference between a sanctioned contest, though, and somebody saying, I'm going to make a Star Wars film. I'm going to put it on YouTube. I'm going to charge $3.99 for people to watch it. Mm-hmm. And getting away with that.
You're absolutely correct. But I think where I was saying, though, is that how they interact with the fans is different. Because Star Wars goes out and says, play in the sandbox. CBS says, hold on, here are the rules, and you better. And it's like you guys were talking about with fair use. I mean, you see it at comic book conventions. When you have cosplayers out there that make money at conventions dressing up as these characters... I mean, that's a form of IP control that they've lost.
It is an IP infringement, you know, technically. Yes.
And arguably, they often make a lot more money than somebody who's just doing YouTube commentary is going to make.
It is a sticky widget, but I definitely understand what you're saying about the guy over here. Let's see if his name is here again. Jeffrey. Yeah. I do understand about you went through the process, and good on you. And right now, with the launch of Discover, that they're locking everything down, and they're famous for, honestly, unfortunately, CBS is, and Paramount is famous right now for court cases against fan films. And I'm glad you brought up the Star Wars thing, Chris, because over on Neil Before Odd, which is on the Geek Girl Authority, which is a partnership with us on Booze and Phasers, on Neil Before Odd, she interviewed, I can't remember the guy's name, but he had the fan favorite film this year for Star Wars. And he said, as a filmmaker, as an independent filmmaker, their rules were very, very agreeable and very easy to work with. There are ways, what we're saying is there are ways to make it happen to where you keep control, you keep the property. And in this particular case, CBS didn't seem to want to do that, but it still is actually a whole different concept in my mind than the Fear of the Walking Dead shutting the guy down because he used some stills.
Right.
Now, to that point, the guy can just stop doing stills and do a show. And if they say you can't talk about it, then that's infringement of freedom of speech. And, you know, screw you, man. But
well, yeah, so. I mean, there's a lot of issues at play here. Just to highlight this real quick before we move on. We're talking, there is obviously the copyright holders. There are the people who are creating content based on intellectual properties. And then there are the vehicles for that content to reach an audience, which are like, you know, Google with YouTube. So there's a lot of different players in the issue. You know what I mean? And just because something gets flagged on YouTube doesn't mean that CBS or AMC or whoever is the bad man. But sometimes we report on a situation where somebody's getting shut down for seemingly no reason, you know, on a oddly specific thing. In the case of the Walking Dead issue, all of that guy's content for the Walking Dead proper, the main show, no problem. You know what I mean? He hasn't had any issues, not a big deal at all. It was specifically Fear the Walking Dead for some reason, and that means that somebody's sitting in a chair somewhere and either doesn't understand what's going on or is just being a little ham-fisted. And just like denying everything. I don't know. But I think, you know, Google and YouTube is its own beast right now. I mean, that is a mess. That is,
yeah,
it is crazy. I completely understand why they, as a platform for this content, have to find ways to work between, you know, the content creators and potential copyright and IP holders. It's really important that they not be seen as complacent in the theft of content. But I also think that a lot of stuff that's on YouTube isn't necessarily theft of content. I mean, there's entire movies put up on YouTube, which I find astounding. They're usually older movies, but it's like, it'll be the entire movie. And I'm like, how does this, I mean, obviously it's not monetized because I think that would get flagged right away, but that's clearly not fair use. I mean, you're just reposting an entire film. That's not,
right.
That's not fair to anyone. You know, on the flip side, you know, when you're doing a review show, I think what we were trying to get at is AMC, for example, you need to reach out. Like, if you have a problem with that guy's content, have one of your people send him a message and say, this is the issue we have. If you want people to continue to make content that advertise your properties and your shows and brings attention to them, and they're somehow like not falling in the lines of what you think is acceptable, you got to reach out to them. Because you should want that. That's what we were saying, is that you should absolutely want something like this, a show like this, to highlight, you know, things that are happening because it brings attention to your project.
So if you've got this guy who's doing that with The Walking Dead, right? Promoting and saying, oh, here's why you need to watch The Walking Dead. Here's why it's great. And having somebody from AMC reach out to him to say, all right, here's where the issue is. You're using these stills. We'll put you on a press list and get you a set of approved stills or something like that. Mm-hmm. What about the guy who has a video channel saying The Walking Dead is stupid? He's using the same stills. He's not driving. He's trying to drive people away from watching The Walking Dead. Is he protected by those same rights that the guy who's trying to promote the show?
Well, that's the real question, because the question becomes, and this is where we have a legal gray area, right? Because his content, where he talks about how he perceives a show or a movie or whatever, mm-hmm. is his content,
right?
So, and if he's showing press stills just to demonstrate what is out there press-wise, you know what I mean? What has been released for the press to discuss.
Right. The approved photos for the
Approved press, photos right. for press use. Mm-hmm. I feel like his content is his,
right.
and he should receive any monetization options that are available. If people are watching it and adverts are run while they're watching it, he should receive that money.
Right.
Because he's not stealing clips from their show, you know, or anything like that.
Oh, no. And I agree. I'm thinking that the differentiation between AMC reaching out there and probably not going to reach out to, like, help the guy who's the show, even though
it's not in their interest to do so. I agree with that.
Sure. I think, Emmett, you just touched on, a bigger grayer area, which is who gets to find who press is, right? You put out an EPK, electronic press kit,
right?
And apparently this guy knows how to get that. Either one, good guy or bad guy, they can get the electronic press kit. Right. Who gets to define who's press? Because they talk about it,
sure.
right?
Sure.
TMZ doesn't have to be nice to you to be press and take pictures and be protected by the laws that either separate the paparazzi or protect the paparazzi either way. You know, I'm just saying you don't have to talk nice. Who gets to decide who's press? And that's kind of almost the area we're getting into is people talking about your product,
right?
Good or bad. Well, AMC's standard seems to be shut them all down.
Right.
And specifically talk to Jeffrey here. That in our opinion, in my opinion, I won't say our, but in my opinion, that's where I have the problem is you're just blanketly shutting somebody down going, well, you're not press. We release this to the press. You're not press. There's no definite. Who defines that?
Right.
You know, now you're telling me we're not just because you don't like what we do or we're getting money off it. Press people get money off of talking about your stuff. And Ibbot, when we started FTH, you had some insight to people who knew about our content, which is about Marvel. And now we never got official word, but we got the inside word that said, hey, basically, as long as you're cool about the brand and you don't flagrantly try to steal it and you don't flagrantly try to bash it,
right,
we're going to leave you alone.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's how a lot of companies do tend to work, except when, and then when we see stuff like this where it doesn't, that's where we go, why not? Why don't you lean in?
Yeah. And I think some companies are good with that. Some companies, it does come down more to the company than it does to generic copyright law. It's just how much does Marvel want to pursue it versus AMC? And Marvel seems to be, you know, they issue their licenses out to so many different companies to create individual items, all those backpacks and baseballs and toys and this kind of toys and these kind of toys that you see out on the shelves, you know, all different companies. And so Marvel's is very willing to work with companies that are willing to work with them. Whereas AMC is like, no, it has to be used in this way, this kind of agreement, and that's it.
Marvel doesn't even go out of its way to shut down blatant clones, tiny, mighty heroes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it is obviously a Marvel clone. And well, they're like, yeah, whatever.
I think it's interesting that Marvel being a part of Disney, being literally the biggest, you know,
entertainment
company in the world, and arguably right now, hands down, the king of the hill. You know what I mean? I mean, Disney is rocking it from top to bottom.
Right.
That, except in their Disney Interactive. I think it's interesting that a company like that, that has such a presence in the marketplace, they have every reason in the world to try to quell any negative opinions.
Right.
But they just don't. I think that their stance is, if you're talking about our product, at least seemingly so, I mean, because there's no big dramas come out about them. Seemingly so, they're like when the Punisher fan film was getting made, they're like, no, well, you can't do that. And for similar reasons to what Jeffrey mentioned about Star Trek, you know, they knew that Punisher was going to be on Daredevil relatively soon at that point, because if I recall the timeline correctly, it was around the time that Daredevil season one was coming out, which means that they were probably already working on ideas for season two, which means that they probably had some idea that they were going to do something with Punisher. So they say, no, please don't do that. And I respect that. I mean, it's tough because, like, I respect fan films and what they're trying to accomplish. And I wish that there was a good way for them to get their product out there. But at the same time, the problem is that it's a product. And if it's a fan film where you throw money at something and just put it out there for just because it's a passion project, like a cosplayer would who doesn't get paid, there's really nothing anybody can say. You're just going to throw it out there and you're going to find a place to put it anyways. But if you try to monetize it, well, now you are literally taking their IP without their permission. So I get that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like talking about AMC with Fear of the Walking Dead, like, you're kind of a fringe property. I mean, Walking Dead is hugely popular, don't get me wrong. But you're a smaller network with a couple of successful shows. And right now, they're arguably running out of those because, you know, like, a lot of their big flagship shows have ended recently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
go watch Preacher.
You know, so the thing is, like, you kind of need that word of mouth, especially for Fear the Walking Dead. Nothing has ever possessed me to watch Fear the Walking Dead. Okay.
Right.
Because I mean, I have a hard time watching the main. I love the main show. I was up all night last night watching the main show, catching up because it was finally on Netflix. But I have a hard time going out of my way week to week to try to find a way to make it part of my week. You know what I mean? Even though it's great content. So your fringe show that is a companion show to, you know, your other fringe show if somebody's doing review content for that, you gotta, as a company who's interested in seeing your product be successful, you have to take some vested interest in the people who are trying to support you. And I feel like that's what that content producer was doing. He might have some negative critique from time to time, but the impression that I got from briefly scanning his channel was that it's a lot of passion. It's a lot of commitment to sit there week after week and review what happened and show the stills and talk about it. Like, you know, that's a big commitment from somebody who doesn't work for you, you know, and obviously yeah. you know, a YouTube channel generates revenue, but that's the whole thing. He's committed to producing content and he's chosen to highlight your television show. So I think companies need to understand that. And, you know, you need to take some effort to support those outlets. And, you know, a little message that says, hey, you know, this is, like you said, this is the approved kit. That's one thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. But just saying, nope, nope, nope. You know what I mean? The other problem is, like, to elaborate a little bit on the issue from YouTube's side, they don't just deny the monetization to the content producer. They steal it. I mean, that's probably a little bit of a heavy term to use, but
they redirect it.
They redirect any monetization to themselves. And I think that is kind of disgusting, personally. I could understand putting in a claim saying, hey, I don't think that video should be able to generate revenue off of my intellectual property. That I get. But I don't think you should be able to take that revenue. That's right. When it's original content, you know, when it's critique or criticism or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can go to the New York Times when they publish a movie review. And if they bombed on your Suicide Squad film, for example, Warner Brothers isn't going to go be like, all right, well, all of the sales from that issue that, you know, that day's publication that you put out, they go to us now. That's not how it works. That's crazy. So
yeah.
I think overall the big message here is that the industry needs to find a way to adapt to the times and move forward. And they need to find a way to – there's so many people who write blogs and articles and produce videos and podcasts and everything about stuff in entertainment. They need to find a way to work with those outlets because they generate a lot of word of mouth, both good and bad, to be honest. But when you come out looking like, you know, you're the caveman in the room – by just like, you know, bopping everybody over the head with your IP stick, it's not good. It's not a good look for you. You know what I mean? And I think that's what we were getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and one last thing to Jeffrey, because we got another email to read from him or another comment to read from him, but you're right. It is not our decision what they do with their copyright. However, it is in our power and all of our listeners' power to express your opinion and act on that opinion. And obviously our opinions are not always based off of what the black and white facts are, but how we perceive the company acting.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another one, and this one is going to get kicked to Ibit after I read it because sure. We have commented on a lot of this stuff here, and he hasn't had a chance. So from 9-16, which was, what, last week's show? Awesome. I really appreciate the thoughtful discussion on sexuality and race change in the comics. I was reminded – this is also Jeffrey, by the way.
Okay.
I was reminded of a black actor I knew when I was in college. He was a Shakespearean-trained – He was Shakespearean trained and very talented and frustrated that nobody seemed willing to cast him in Shakespeare except as Othello or an extra. He maintained, and I think he was right, that he should be able to play any role without regard to his race, which simply shouldn't be all that important. The question is a bit different when discussing changes to the character rather than to an actor playing the character. There are some characters like Black Panther for whom their race is an integral part of their persona. I'm sorry, I just got a picture of Jim Carrey as a Black Panther, and it was horrible. there are other characters for whom race simply isn't an issue other than how the character has been traditionally drawn. There's nothing about the Mary Jane Watson character, for example, that's specifically Caucasian. What is important about Mary Jane is her attitude and that she is a fashion model and dancer, which those last two are definitely Zendaya. Given that, having Zendaya play the role is perfectly reasonable. For that matter, there's nothing specifically Caucasian about Peter Parker, so I'd be fine with him being played by a young black actor. By contrast, the character of Luke Cage is defined to a certain degree by his race. It's more than just how he was drawn. It's an integral part of what drives him as a character. It'd be ridiculous to have him played by a white actor. Unfortunately, there are a few black characters either in DC or Marvel universes for whom race is incidental, and that's too bad. As for sexuality, I think there's a good case to be made that Steve Rogers, even in the MCU, is either asexual or intentionally celibate. Short of a few kisses, he seems disinclined towards any sexual involvement and rather flustered by women. In the first Avengers, he spent In the first Avengers, he spent several weeks apparently touring with the crowd of chorus girls, most of whom must have been more than willing to have a role in the Hey with Mr. Perfect without any apparent involvement. Yes, Rogers falls for Agent Carter and her younger counterpart, but, well, perhaps Tony Stark and Thor are the only Avengers who have beards. Just saying.
Take it away, sir. Let's first talk about race. He nails it on the head. I mean, Luke Cage has to be played by a black character. Or, I mean, sorry, by a black actor. It'd be like saying, Bryan Cranston as Rosa Parks in the new, you know.
Wait, though. Yeah. She is the one who knocks. So it kind of would fit.
Okay, yeah. But it's, you know, race for those characters, or for and real people, obviously, race is an important part of who that character is. Luke Cage, for example. But he's totally right. Mary Jane totally could be played by an actor of any nationality. She just has to be, like you said, a dancer. We have to see why Peter Parker finds her attractive. So she has to be pleasing looking. She has to be attractive herself, but she can be any race whatsoever. And really the same goes for, like he says, for Peter Parker. I honestly can't disagree with anything he says in the first part of his email. Yes, Paul.
Huh?
Oh, I thought you made a noise. You made a noise like you were going to interject. Maybe not.
No, I think I've spoken at length on my feelings on this, and maybe it's not. Maybe my opinion isn't the popular opinion. I don't know, but I think we kind of explored.
I have to go back and listen to last week's episode. Apparently, I stopped at Boy Toys and I just turned off the podcast. And then the second part of his email regarding Steve Rogers. Well, all right. When he's traveling around with the chorus girls, he's already involved with Sharon Carter. He's already smitten with Sharon Carter. So that might be why he's staying away from
Peggy Carter.
I'm sorry, Peggy Carter. Right. Sharon Carter's a new one. The niece.
That's not confusing.
Well, what, that they have the same last name? They're related, Charles.
No, I mean, that he keeps it in the family that much.
Well, hey, yeah. I dated four Kims before I met my wife. I think that kept things pretty easy to keep track of.
That's a completely different topic, but very interesting.
Well, no, you just if you're going to shout out another woman's name, oh, Miss Carter, you know. Might as well make it as easy on yourself. Oh, Miss Carter, you know, you don't want to mess it up.
Sorry, Miss Carter.
That's it for me.
Anyway, so I think that I wouldn't necessarily go as far as saying he's asexual, but I probably would land, all right, closer to intentionally celibate. America is his greatest
Thank
love.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
service to his country, that's his greatest love.
Well, and anyone romantically would kind of fall a distant second to that. Oh, Red Skull's causing problems? Sorry. Yeah. As much as I'd love to have a late night tonight, gotta go get Red Skull.
Right.
So I think it's more the intentionally celibate, just different priorities. Steve's got different priorities.
Yeah, I think he's obviously he's a snapshot of a bygone era, and he's as a character, he's a man who's married to his work, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he is the ultimate soldier. He's, you know, he's there at the slightest prompting. I don't think he's been implied as being asexual, but the intentionally celibate thing is probably absolutely fair. I mean, I think things would have progressed with Peggy had the opportunity been there. You know what I mean?
Right.
But then when you get frozen and wake up several decades later, it's kind of hard, and you're in literally a whole new world. Don't sing any Aladdin songs.
Dude, you said we have Frozen and Aladdin. Come on, stop it.
When you're in a whole new scenario, it's hard to like make romance your priority, right?
Sure. Yep.
When you wake up and you have to save the world and you become the part of the super team. But there was chemistry between Steve and Natasha in the first the second Cap film.
Yep.
But it was, she has chemistry with everyone, and I really liked the way they played that off later, where he was like, you know, I know Nat pretty well. And there, you know, there's flirting and then there's genuine interest. You know what I mean? So kind of shows that they, I mean, I think it's kind of implied that she's had a relationship with a lot of the Avengers, and I think Steve's one of them, but I just don't know how far that goes. I don't want to say that they were a hookup.
Right. No, no. But, you know, even in the first Avengers film, or no, I'm sorry, in the second Avengers film, there's definitely a very strong bond between her and the Hulk with the whole, the lullaby thing that she uses to kind of coax him down and stuff. And I think that it's just the Natasha character. You know, we've all known women in our lives that were flirtatious, and we played around with them as from a friendly point of view, not played around with them in anything further than that.
Unless their name was Kim.
That's right. But nothing ever further happened with that. It was just like the Bruce Willis, Sybil Shepherd thing for the first few seasons of Moonlighting before they did eventually hook up. It was like way more fun to be in that edge of relationship than to actually tip over and go the edge. Plus, I mean, we're talking about comic books. There's so few examples that I can think of where a relationship, a sexual relationship, a romantic relationship is integral to that character. You've got it with Peter Parker and Mary Jane. You've got it with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. You've got it with, Jessica Jones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of another really good example. Scarlet Witch and Vision, Hank Pym and Wasp. But it's not, you know, a relationship isn't crucial to the character that Steve Rogers is. I mean, even Tony Stark in the movies, you would think that millionaire playboy Tony Stark, you'd see him every other scene in bed with another supermodel when he's not, you know, hanging out with Pepper Potts when she's got her back turned. But again, it's comic books. They're here to save the day, unless the day involves their loved one getting taken from them or keeping the secret from their loved one. And then we see those relationships getting pulled in to be shown in the comics. And I think the same thing goes for the movie. When the significant other, when the relationship is pertinent to the story, we see it. It's kind of like why we never see characters going to the bathroom or sleeping. You know, it's not pertinent to the story.
Unless it's Deadpool.
Right. Unless it's Deadpool. Deadpool, by the way, has broken every rule that I've laid out here so far. But unless it's integral to the story, we just have to assume that they're doing all that stuff on their own time. We have to assume that when we're not watching the Avengers take people out, Thor is on Tinder, swiping left, swiping right to find romance. But since it's not integral to the story, we don't see it.
Right. That's well put. And for these amazing comments that were sent in by Jeffrey, we are going to reward you with a very special Loot Crate advertisement right now. Not the Loot Crate itself, just ad for it. So, hey, you know what? It's past September 19th, so you no longer can get your Gone in 60 Seconds Loot Crate box. It's gone.
Can we finally stop talking about the Gone in 60 Seconds revival?
It's sped on by.
It did indeed. So, but you know, coming up next month is another great box. So you've got to the 19th of October to get in there and get your box. Go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code giant size team up to save some money off of your order and get what is the next awesome thing that is coming. We'll be able to tell you more about that next week. But again, lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up.
That's right. I can't find the email, but I'm thinking it's MetaHuman is the next Loot Crate subject.
So how's that different than all the other? They all have super something in them.
Because there are no MetaHumans in Gone in 60 Seconds, Charles.
Okay. Are we sure? We saw Angelina Jolie hotwire that car awful fast. I don't think she can really do that.
Not the Fast and the Furious, Charles. There are no MetaHumans in Gone in 60
Seconds. No. That's her marriage. The Fast and the Furious.
Oh. And also,
timely.
Also timely. Gone in 60 Seconds.
I was 12 years, guy. Come on, give her a break.
I guess there's no Mr. and Mrs. Smith 2 coming anytime soon.
No.
All right. So, Brian, you've got a headline here that you seem excited about.
That's right. Yeah. Tonight is the premiere of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's fourth season. And they've been introducing a character or been talking about a character, teasing the fact that they're bringing Ghost Rider to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And just wanted to do a really quick primer about this Ghost Rider, because it's not Johnny Blaze. It's not the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider. This is a brand new character as far as seeing on the small screen or the big screen. It's Robbie Reyes, who is the fourth person to be Ghost Rider. Fifth, if you count the, you know, Ghost Rider in the 60s that was like a cowboy, an actual ghost rider.
Which was really, actually really cool looking in the first Ghost Rider film. Just saying.
Oh, did they have that in the film? In the film?
Towards the end. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. So Robbie Reyes basically becomes the Ghost Rider after he goes into, competes in an illegal street race. He uses his power, initially kind of Peter Parker style, to actually earn money to take care of his little brother, who is developmentally disabled, Gabe. We don't know, by the way, how much of this is actually going to be portrayed in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but hopefully a lot. And instead of a motorcycle, he drives a Dodge Charger that is the, the Hell Charger, as opposed to the Hell Cycle.
It's cool.
And it's
cool
bonded looking with his soul and all that stuff, and it's impervious to normal weapons. It can repair itself, and it's, you know, obviously on fire. There's a new comic coming out. What's that?
You think they went to John Carpenter for tips?
Yeah, right. there's a new comic coming out as well, because originally when Marvel launched the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider, it only lasted for 12 issues. So they're relaunching Ghost Rider to go along with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. character. So you'll be able to read his comic exploits as you enjoy, hopefully, his week-to-week exploits on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm not looking forward to the other plot of this whole season.
I hope what you heard is...
No, I read it. I mean, this is an article. It's posted. If you go to Breaking the Panel on Facebook, facebook.com/Breaking the Panel, if I find stories that are interesting to me, and Chris does too, and Klotz and Ibbett, we post them, and this is on our page, where the basic synopsis of this season is there's a new director, because now that S.H.I.E.L.D. is out in the open and Coulson is Cody Fingers' dad, he can't be the director anymore, so they're hiring a new director. And Coulson goes back into the field as a secret operative with Mac. He's Mac's partner now. Why is he Mac's partner? Because Daisy is on the lam again. For yet another season, we're going to be hunting down Daisy because she's off doing her own thing again, and this director doesn't care if he gets her dead or alive. It sounded a whole lot like the Inhumans season two with the Battlestar Galactica guy.
Yeah, and even the little preview, the 2 or 3 minute teaser that was out the other day, I alluded to that in a big bad way, because there's speculation whether or not she's being lethal with people, blah, blah, blah. Because it was May briefing Coulson and Mac on the mission.
You know, there are other characters on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, there were until we wrote them off and then canceled the show.
Until they thought they were getting their own show. Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two of the most interesting characters on the show, sadly. So, hey, you know, I'll reserve judgment until I watch it tonight. I'm hoping it's going to be a good season, but yeah, let's.
I won't watch it either way. I mean, I watched all of Agent Carter season two, and you know, that was a train wreck. So.
You know, it's funny because we were having a conversation before we went into this recording, Charles, Chris, and I, about Supergirl and some of the things that Charles felt was a little bit heavy-handed in Supergirl and stuff. I'm tired of angsty Daisy. I'm just over it. And if we're going to get another season of more of that, I can't say that I'm that interested. I mean, I'll watch out of obligation. but like, I mean, can we really beat this horse any deader? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we get it. She's edgy.
Okay. She's a millennial. She likes cornhole. And
wait, what? What?
Cornhole the game, Charles.
Oh, it's all a game.
I don't even know what that is. If somebody wanted to play cornhole the game with me, I'm like, no, you go back to prison, dude. I don't need any of that. I don't know what you're talking about.
You've never seen that game where you toss beanbags? It's like horseshoes with little slanted wooden platforms.
Oh, I had no idea. Why would you call that cornholing? That's horrible.
Nobody calls it cornholing.
Put my beans in your hole, man. That's just wrong. I don't
all
get
right,
it.
All right, let's not talk about sex acts that are performed in prisons. Anyways, yeah, my point is, like, I'm kind of bored with that. I thought that they were really building up last season to us moving away from that, because she was becoming stronger as a character. She was, you know, getting a little bit more invested in her powers, and she was, you know, actually showing some really strong leadership qualities and stuff like that. I liked that, but here we are, one step forward, three steps back. So I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out.
We'll have to see what the reasons are that she goes rogue, because she's now accepted her powers. She's now accepted within the team. And those were the two things that made her go rogue in the past. So we'll see.
Well, she just lost her old boyfriend to her new boyfriend, blown up in space. Right. Yeah, that's a good enough reason, I guess, for Marvel. Right. Oh, geez. We'll see. You know, there's some other great shows coming back.
She's it's a desolate wasteland on the boyfriend front for her right now, I guess, right?
Now she's going to date the new Ghost Rider, I guess, is what's going to happen.
No, that's what's probably going to happen.
No, man, if she dates him, he's going to die.
Could we turn air conditioning? Dead,
kind of, isn't he?
Well, that's true. He is dead. So what else? I know, didn't Gotham come back last night?
Gotham premiered last night, yes.
All right.
Watch it?
I did.
Tell us about it.
Well, spoiler free.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm going to give it, I'll give him a minor spoiler because it's nothing integral to the show or anything that doesn't, no plot points are given away, but Man-Bat.
So, oh, nice.
I'm trying to figure out at what point they're going to stop giving us classic Batman villains, because all of the Batman villains can't be 15 to 20 years older than Batman, or I have less respect for Batman.
Good point.
Geriatric thumper.
Yeah. Exactly. And I guess my other problem too is I've been seeing a lot of speculation on the web, just articles and stuff, and I haven't seen anything officially come out from studio, but the producers have not been forthcoming about whether or not we're going to see Batman in season 3. And a 14-year-old Batman should not exist.
Right.
And I really feel like they're doing a disservice to the character, because they're not letting him grow without this massive support structure around him. Like, yes, he lost his parents, but he has this great support structure that protects him and insulates him in such a way that I don't know how this Bruce Wayne ever turns into Batman.
Like, gotcha.
Where does he go off on his own to become this fighter, this detective?
Well, hopefully we're still several seasons away from that. I mean, it is, and as it should be, the Commissioner Gordon show.
Mm-hmm.
And to argue your first point, name a Spider-Man villain, a major Spider-Man villain that isn't considerably older than him.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, but the Batman we know is like in his, 30s, yeah. 40s even, depending on when you're reading it. And, when Clayface is brand new and Batman's 30, that's a whole different thing when Batman's 14 and Clayface is brand new.
Right.
I don't know.
One thing I will say about the support structure thing is, like, when the Nolan trilogy happened, they kind of implied that Bruce didn't really go off and start to find himself as Batman until he was, like, much older anyways, like, basically college age. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always been implied that he grows up, not normally, but, at least with the normal support structure, goes to college, and then at that point, that's when he starts to derail and kind of pursue his own path. So, I mean, they've done so much on Gotham, though, where it's like, well, this isn't a normal childhood. So, I don't know.
Yeah. And then as far as the Poison Ivy change that's coming, mm-hmm. I don't know that it was handled well, but it's explained right away in the first episode. And I don't know if that's reactionary to all of the lead up or if that was always intended. It just seems like it was very quick to happen in the first episode.
For the folks at home who might not know what Chris is talking about, basically, Ivy's been recast by an older actress.
Oh, and, really? Okay.
An older, more voluptuous actress, because you can't have Poison Ivy without those qualities, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so
well,
they,
she's sprouted.
Yeah. Thanks,
so,
Dad.
Story-wise, I forget the name of the character, but she's touched by a character that ages her.
Yes.
I forget what the character's name is, but the character...
Michael Landon. What? Come on.
No, that dates you. It doesn't come age on. You.
Yeah. In any case,
Fair enough.
Where it's a brief touch show, she's only aged about like 14 years or so, whereas other people that character touches are like, turned into old men and women, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, but they said that they had stories that they wanted to tell that were more traditionally in line with who Ivy is as a character, and they can't do that with like a 12-year-old actress. They can't do that with a 12-year-old character. So, I don't know if it was just PR puff, but they said they were very pleased with the performance of the original actress, but that they if they wanted to fully explore the character, they had to move it forward. So,
yeah. And I say, if you want to fully explore that character, you need to wait until Bruce grows up.
Yeah,
well, it's fair enough.
For sure. You know.
All right. Well, I know Lucifer is back, and I'm kind of excited with the way they ended the last one, but I'm at the same time going, you didn't do a whole lot with the supernatural aspect of the show. That was worth anything. You know, it felt like a whole lot of nothing last season. 50-50. You know, there were some shows like, wow, they did some cool stuff. The other 50% is like, eh. So I'm going to see what happens this season.
Isn't
the big hook of this season that his mom shows up?
Yes.
Yep. Trisha. Get out of hell.
As someone who hasn't watched the show at all, that didn't really like sell me on it. I was like, wait, what?
Trisha Helfer sold me, but I was going to ask Charles, is that your opinion on the show, or do I just need to ask Jason and David for theirs?
I'm going to shut up, man. That's my opinion. Thank you very much. I was actually, and what's funny is my wife saw the season 2 trailer. And in the trailer, it summed up everything you need to know seriously about season 1. It's like, yeah, see, you didn't watch the last 6 episodes of Lucifer. You got everything that was actually decent about the last 6 episodes of Lucifer in the trailer here. So I don't know. I want to see it. We've got a story about Flash and Arrow coming up. Supergirl is on Netflix. Season 1 is on Netflix right now. So if you haven't given that a shot, now's a good time to do that.
And I'm going
to
pick that back up before I start watching the CW transfer because I hear it gets a lot better after the first 3 or 4 episodes, and that's kind of where we gave up. Calista Flockhart was just too much for me.
That's funny because she changes as a character, and
okay. You know, for the better or for the worse?
For the better.
Okay,
the
good.
I think my problem with her portrayal of that character, and to be fair, I don't know if it's her portrayal of the character or if it's the writer's portrayal of the character, without knowing behind the scenes who did what and where. But that character is so vastly different than the one that's on the page. Like she had a somewhat adversarial relationship with Lois Lane, but not to the degree that they sell it in this show. And she wasn't, I can't remember, was it you, Paul, that described it as Devil Wears Prada?
Yeah.
And it's very much so that in the show. Yeah. And that did bother me. That was kind of a jarring deal. She was never so far gone that you didn't sympathize with her. You didn't kind of like her as a side character, so that, spoilers, in the comics in the 90s, her son Adam was killed by the Toy Man, I believe. Yeah, Toy Man killed her son, and Superman couldn't stop it. And so it was one of those, you know, emotional stories or whatever. And it added a little depth to the character. Well, a lot of depth to the character at that point. But it was easy to sympathize with her because she was already a likable character. And I fully agree. In the first half season, she is not a likable character. And Charles, I know you were talking about episode 4. But episode 4, all I could think of is, well, yeah, you deserve to be smacked down by your horrible
Right. I know. So we know other things are coming back, but I think that's all that's back right now. Is that about right?
Yeah, I want to say early, the first, maybe the second week, I think it was when CW, second week in October is when October. CW fired.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. Well, you know what? You can go to iTunes, give us a rating. We've got more stories coming up. I just wanted you to know, go to iTunes, rate us. You know, it depends on how well you word it, if we read it or not. It doesn't have to be nice necessarily, but if you know, you get ugly with this, I'm not going to read it.
If you get ugly with it, we're going to send a cease and desist. I mean,
we're going to take all your income from that rating and, you know, put it in our profits. Anyway, GiantSizeTeamUp.com is where you can find this show and many others. And of course, Patreon.com/BreakingThePanel. We got a whole new Patreon coming very soon, thanks to Klotz and Wisdom. So stay tuned for that, but we could definitely use your support. And now we've got this quick story by Chris. Actually, this whole segment is pretty much Chris's, so go for it, Chris. Okay.
All right, so news came out yesterday that Marvel is about to debut a Hulk comic starring Jennifer Walters this December. Essentially, we'll boil it down to she's going to drop the she off of her name. As we all know, I'm assuming at this point, Civil War II, the big crossover from this summer, Bruce Banner, the Incredible Hulk, was killed. So we already know that Amadeus Choi was going to be taking over the mantle of the, what is he now? Not the Incredible Hulk. He's the Awesome Hulk. Totally Awesome Hulk.
Totally Awesome.
Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yes,
that's his name.
All new, all fresh and clean.
Oh, no.
And now Jen is going to be taking the mantle of the Hulk. And I'm just going to read, I won't read the whole story, but I will read the quote by Alex Alonso. The title She-Hulk evokes lighthearted stories about Jennifer Walters, who is at peace with herself and in full control of her powers, says Marvel editor-in-chief Alex Alonso. This isn't that book. On the other hand, the title Hulk implies all of the baggage that comes with that comic's 50-plus year history, the ongoing battle with the monster within, and that's why it's more appropriate for the series. Jen went through a major trauma in Civil War II, and Mariko and Nico's story will deal with the fallout of that trauma. The anxiety and the anger, sometimes self-destructive, that come along with it. If there is a light at the end of the tunnel, Jen is going to have to search hard for it, and she's going to have to battle with some pretty big monsters, including the one within, to find herself again. So, with the trauma of losing Bruce in the way that it was done in that story, Jennifer has to deal with that loss, and this is how a Hulk deals with that loss and tries to find herself again.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah. And so this kind of, I thought this was interesting off the heels of our episode last week, and I think it speaks to mantle change, I want to say, but without the mantle change, because she's always been a Hulk. So it's giving her the chance to fill those shoes that are emptied right now. So, because as we all know, it's just for right now.
Always.
Now, did anybody want to have anything on there? Because I've got a Hulk moment coming.
No.
Okay.
Go for it. I'm seething.
Are you going to Hulk out? Are you going to get angry?
I can't get that rage filled, or it's not going to come across right. Okay, I know we all care about this show and that we all have other projects and things we do outside of this show, but I feel like we all want to make sure that we're doing good by this show and putting our best foot forward. We never want to do anything to embarrass this show. So I'm not going to put any shows on blast. I will just say that this show is so gay. I heard a certain someone say one of the most controversial things I've ever heard in my life. And now that he's here, I'd like him to answer for such a horrendous, horrendous thing that was said when he told people, millions upon millions, I'm sure, that Star Wars Episode 2 is better than Star Wars Episode 3.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't even understand
it. Totally.
You guys are crazy. I don't know.
The bounty hunter chase at the beginning is entertaining.
Space snakes, man. Space snakes.
Space snakes?
That's how the bounty hunter's trying to kill Princess Amidala. He put space snakes in her room.
You know what, though? Okay, hold on a second. Because during that show, I was reminded of that horrible segment, because this came up on TMS?
Yes.
Yeah. So during that segment, people reminded me about that horrendous segment where you've got C-3PO's head being replaced by a droid head.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny, though.
It's so unwatchable now.
Yeah.
You've got R2-D2 and his magical rockets that never made any appearance ever in any other Star Wars film.
Just enough to light some battle droids on fire. Yeah.
Exactly. And but you've also got that really, really cool gladiator-style battle with Amidala, Anakin, and Obi-Wan, where they have to go. They're strapped to the chain to the rocks, and they have to go up against the thing. Which
starring
I think is
in sync.
Starring in sync, what?
Yes, in sync was in battle.
Oh, were they really in the background with lightsabers?
George's daughter was a big fan, and I don't think it was all of them. I think it was a few of them are in there.
Yeah,
Jedi.
One or two. Yeah.
Joey Fatone.
Give me that super exciting fight where Amidala watched all the Jedi save her.
Yeah.
No, she like wrapped her chain around the neck of the.
Oh, you mean the blatant ripoff of the Jabba scene? Yeah. You
know, that cat looking creature was named Kim. Come on.
Because, you know,
really?
I don't know.
Because if her daughter had to choke a giant, fat, gelatinous blob, obviously the mother has to choke something out while she's chained to a rock at some point in the story. You're also forgetting, Brian, that was the film that had the literal best dialogue that's ever been put to the silver screen. You know,
sand.
I hate sand because it's coarse and it gets everywhere.
But you have episode 3, which just says, hey, we're going to take this weird twist and make him do weird stuff and all of a sudden throw him in some lava. And now that's how he turned into Darth Vader. It's crap, man.
I've got the high ground. You can't attack me. I've got high ground.
And then he proved him right.
You guys are really just proving why I pretend those three films don't exist.
Okay. Exactly. Thank you.
It's like
thank
you. You know, asking... which Olsen twin is the worst one?
Oh, Lord. Or which Weasley twin?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, whatever.
And the spotlight moves.
You know, yeah. I want to circle back a little bit and mention real quick.
So did the Pilgrims, but the Indians still won.
Damn it.
I messed that up. Never mind.
Anyway, you're a moron.
Fair enough.
That was a critical fail. I almost called you an idiot, but that's unfair to idiots. Brian, you mentioned that one of the scenes just is on the droid swapping, head swapping thing.
Yeah.
Just it doesn't add up anymore. I really feel like that entire, the prequel trilogy is so dated by when it was made. Because whenever I've tried to watch any of it since then, I'm like, oh, this feels so painfully late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
Well, it is. But, I mean, you can watch the movies that are 20 years earlier, the original trilogy, and, it...
They don't really feel dated.
See, my thing about those, dated. Yeah, if I didn't know when those came out, I wouldn't know when they were made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't intrinsically already know.
It's like when comics had the bright white paper and the super bright fuchsia ink and stuff. Like there was a segment of the 80s around Secret Wars 2 that where comics just hurt my eyes to read.
Yeah. So,
all right, Chris, what about, there's something about Dragon Con you wanted to bring up.
About Dragon Con?
So you said.
No. That was no. You're good. I just for anybody that hasn't listened to Booze and Phasers live from Dragon Con, you should. You get to listen to a whole new side of Charles, which my rant at the beginning of this maybe should be taken into consideration.
Yeah, Chris advised that I watch it, and I responded to him with like, I'm like, well, what am I in for? And he's like, I'm like, am I going to cringe myself to death? And he's like, you might. And I'm like, well, I don't know.
No, everybody laughed and laughed. It was.
Yeah, but Charles, you have to ask yourself, because I haven't checked this out yet, so I don't know. But you have to ask yourself, were they laughing with you or at you?
I was drunk. I didn't care.
Right.
So, now, Brian, did you pick up the Blu-ray of Civil War that came out last week?
You know I did, because I buy all the crap. Every piece of crap comes to my house. I'm wearing a friggin' Pokemon Go Plus on my wrist right now. So it arrived. I want to pull up a list of what's on. I should have brought the box down, but it's got a decent amount of bonus features. You can actually get through all the bonus features in about 2 to 3 hours. It's not a ton of stuff. The deleted scenes are great. There's a lot of great stuff on the as far as the deleted scenes. There's a fantastic gag reel. I'm typing. I'm pulling up a list of what's on the bonus. List right here. A couple of the things that were big call outs to me though. The Doctor Strange first look. So there's a little featurette on Doctor Strange that is, it's definitely not spoilery, but it does give you a little bit more of kind of the background of the character and who he was in the comics and you know, if he's going to be that same kind of thing, in the movie. There's also, like a pair of documentaries or a pair of featurettes about Iron Man and Captain America and what their journey has been. What's really cool about those, it pulls from all of their solo movies and kind of shows you what led them to their decision to be on one side of the Accord or the other side of the Accord. Those are both really cool. And then, of course, there's just a great documentary on the making of that shows the some of the special effects stuff and that's all right. The big standouts are that Doctor Strange and the Road to Civil War featurettes that are on here.
That's cool.
So worth picking up, or at least finding somebody you know who's got a copy of it and borrowing it from them to check it out.
That's always been one of my favorite things about the DC animated films is when I go buy those, I split the cost in half and I'm like, half of this is just for the movie that I'm buying. Yes. And the other half is for the featurette for the movie that's coming in 6 months. It's totally. I love when they do that.
Yeah. And they do a really good job of doing something that gives you a little bit more than the trailers have given, but nothing super spoilery. So, big props to Marvel Studios for yet another great Blu-ray. Although I do miss the one shots, they did that for all the phase one stuff and they were always so, so good. And they just haven't, no one shot since the phase one, stuff like, Hail to the King, mm-hmm. and, The Item in the Desert, and you've got Coulson talking to another agent about what they found. It was all such great stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Why do you think they stopped doing that?
I don't know. I don't know if it was just too pricey, because they were well-received, and I think they helped. They definitely helped sell the Blu-rays, I would think, anyway. I mean, I think people, if they were on the fence, if they found out there was like a new little fictional feature on the Blu-ray that kind of continued the story but wasn't main canon, I would think it would pull people in. So
I don't know. All right, we've got one more thing to hit. I know we're running a little long, but that's because we're so happy that Ibbet is back with us, and it'll be back with us ongoing from here on out.
Right.
It's a whole new show. It's gonna be awesome. But we definitely have one more headline to hit. You're gonna want to hear it because it has to do with the TV shows coming back. But please stay tuned right after this. And we're back. That's how that rolls. So this one's for me. I know I reported on this a little while back, but we had some discussion about it today. Unclear on what it actually meant. So we're going to talk about it again, because now is the time you need to hear it. But new episodes of Flash and Arrow won't be available unless you have CW, like live, or TiVo, I guess, would work too, because you're TiVoing it. You're not going to be able to get this online for a while, because according to Cinema Blend, we have the link in our show notes, new episodes, I already read that, CW has created an empire of superhero TV series thanks to The Flash and Arrow, setting a solid foundation for shows like Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl to fit in. We're all excited about this, right? Four great shows on one network. They're going to do a massive crossover. The season is going to be awesome. But a brand new deal with Netflix has some advantages as well as disadvantages for viewers who like to stream their superheroes online rather than watch live. The good news is that the latest seasons will be available for binge watching on Netflix only 8 days after the finale. That's awesome. The bad news is they're not going to be on Hulu at all. You're not going to be able to get this legally, digitally at all, period. I guess unless TiVo counts.
Sorry.
Well, that was and while it doesn't specifically say Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow, we looked on Hulu today. This stuff's supposed to be coming back in a couple weeks, and there are no pages for either one of those shows on Hulu right now. What do you guys feel about it? How do y'all think?
It's a bummer, because that's the way I used to watch all those shows. I mean, we cut the cord in the spring, so I was watching these on Hulu before we officially cut the cord, but it was just so much easier than transferring the content, you know, recording it on TiVo and then watching things in the TiVo app on my iPad. I was just gonna go right into Hulu, watch Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, all that stuff.
Exactly.
And this will be kind of a bummer.
My response is, so you're telling me that you don't want me to watch your show?
Right?
I mean, all right, real talk time. CBS, you come up again because, you know, you're the grandpa network. You want to take your Star Trek show and put it on your streaming service that I'm not going to subscribe to. And then you want to take your hugely successful CW superhero shows that get a lot of views through Hulu. I mean, almost everybody I know watches it through Hulu. You want to take those and take them off the successful platform that they're on, and not offer it to us until the whole season's over? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're saying. You're saying that you don't want me to watch your show until later when I, like, maybe binge it. I mean, come on.
Well, they're hoping that as a super fan of their shows, you're going to go to Amazon Prime, or you're not Prime, but Amazon or iTunes or one of these services, and buy the season so that you can watch new shows when they come out. I think that's what they're trying to do.
Well, they'll be sadly disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's a combination of that, and they still cannot figure out the live plus three ratings and how to sell that to advertisers. So they're just going to force you into the live.
Yeah.
And I am not I'm not a cow to be led down a chute. So you can't funnel me in. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are you saying don't tread on me, Chris Wisdom?
Yes, I am saying that.
Okay. Well, you know, first of all, Arrow had arguably its worst season this past season, right? I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, because I think despite the first season's, like, you know, stumbling a little bit here and there, it was the first season, and it was really redefining what you could do
with these kind of stories on TV. So I give it a lot of, you know, leeway that in that regard. This last season sucked, though. Okay. So you're going to pluck that. You're going to take Flash, which is, you know, honestly, at its height right now, I think. I mean, the last season was amazing. I mean, it's only two seasons in, but it's
not crazy about the finale, but yes.
Right. Exactly. All right. But that's a good point, because I was going to get to that. I was going to say, so we have arguably the worst season of Arrow so far.
Yeah.
And then we have a really jarring, you know, divisive finale for the last season of Flash. And now you're going to pull them off the main outlet that I think most people were watching them on.
Right.
That's rough. Like, that's your, I hate to say it. I almost feel like something's not going to make it out of this season. Something's going to, you know, you're signing a death warrant of something. And it might be like Legends or something like that, but it's going to, something is not going to survive.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably Legends. Legends was good. It took some while to, it took a while for it to find its legs, but I mean, that was the tepid response show of the season.
Now, Chris, is that your thoughts or is that DC On Screen's thoughts?
I don't know. I don't listen to that show.
Oh!
Bert, In any case,
I do have to correct that. I said you can't get it digitally. I was incorrect. Now, of course, video on demand, like iTunes, if you have cable subscriptions, those kind of things might work. But CWTV.com will provide alternatives for CW superhero fans who can't watch the episodes as they air. But that's not necessarily CW Seed. And even if it was CW Seed, which is the app, right?
Right.
Even if it was CW Seed, I've heard, I haven't used it yet, but DC On Screen said that it doesn't work very well.
Well, isn't it one of those situations where you have to have a cable login to be able to use it?
I think you do.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't even tried it. So again, you're kind of being forced into come back to cable and satellite, and we're all going to say no, because we left for the reason to control what we watch.
Yeah.
And right. A big part of people cutting the cord has been the fact that excellent content has been available through Hulu. I love the fact that a lot of the shows that I watch are available the next morning on Hulu. I, you know, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tonight. It'll air tonight. I won't watch it until tomorrow. I'll probably watch it tomorrow evening. Mm-hmm. And I love that about that. You know what I mean? And I hate to misuse the word, but it's almost criminal for you to move away from the very successful model. And I think, Chris, you're right. It probably has something to do with advertising and everything and revenue from that. But this is a big mistake, I think. I mean, this is – we try not to condone piracy on this show. I mean, because you know, we understand it's wrong. You know what
Let
I mean?
Let me recuse myself from the next 5 minutes of content.
But – well, no. I'm not going to say that I think you should. But I'm going to say that people are going to be faced with the choice of do I pirate the shows that I like to watch – or do I just wait until the entire season is over and people on the internet have ruined it umpteen times for me?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's what you're offering. People aren't going to pay. My roommate bought Supergirl, right? Because we were on Amazon because we were going to catch up on it. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, it was over $20. Like I understand that that's a lot of content and that's a pretty good deal. Like if you compare that to like the Civil War Blu-ray, you know what I mean?
Did you buy the digital copy or a hard copy?
For the season. No, for the season, digital copy.
That's a lot of money for a digital copy, isn't it?
That is a lot of money. I mean, it's...
Cord cutting ain't cheap, brothers.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is like people are cutting the cord so that they can save money. Here's the issue. I am not going to spend $20+ to get it through Amazon for four shows. You know what I mean? That's crazy. Like that's a lot of money. And you're going to lose people. I'll probably find a way to make it work, you know, one way or another. But it's like, there's a lot of people out there that are going to fall to the wayside. I think this is horrible. I think this is the worst move possible. I think something's not making it out. That's my feeling. I feel like I'm watching The Walking Dead right now and I'm trying to pick the guy in the room who's going to die by the end of the episode.
Totally true. Yeah. I mean, you know, you consider that, all right, a season lasts for 20 episodes. Let's say roughly 6 months when you figure.
Mm-hmm. Because they always do the winter break and everything. Yeah.
Right.
And if you're buying a cable subscription, you're paying anywhere from $60 to $120 a month, depending on what channel
or more.
And if you've got a dozen shows you like, you're going to be paying about as much, you know, for cutting the cord, you're going to be paying about as much as you were for cable by buying full seasons of stuff, just so you can watch non-terrestrial
I'll tell you, this is kind of a side issue that it doesn't really have anything to do with the CW shows, but I am reluctant to buy things through Amazon, for example, because of the whole fiasco that they pulled with Rebels, Star Wars Rebels, where, you know, because my roommate buys that as well. He bought the most recent season of Rebels, and then they released half a season, and they're like, oh, we're going to charge for the other half.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Oh, you had to pay twice?
Yep. They wow. tried to, like, roll it back. Like, it was a mess. I do believe I'd have to ask him, but I'm pretty sure they did give out, like, a minor credit where they were like, all right, if you bought the first season, you get something for the second season. I'm not positive of that, but I think I recall somebody saying that at some point. But in any case, yeah, they sold it as it's, you know, this season of Rebels. I think it was season two. Season two of Rebels, this price. He buys it, you know, the, like, X number of episodes that half of a season constitutes comes out. And then they're like, all right, so then when the next, you know, half of the season comes out, it's also going to be another $20+. And I was mad for him. He was kind of like, he was a little annoyed, but I was mad for him. I was like, that's BS. I'm sorry. That I really felt like it was a really low blow. Like it was that you don't do that. That's a lot of bait and switch for me. So I'm reluctant now because I feel like other content companies are going to start to think that like you can get away with stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So like if I buy this season of Flash and then they hit the mid-season break and then am I going to have to pay for the second half? I'm not saying that CBS is going to do that, but like I would be if you want to talk about mad, you want to talk about bad publicity, it would roll. There would be a segment on this show and we would talk about it at length. Kind of like I am, you know, doing a Disney right now because I thought that was it. My beef with that too was like for Star Wars Rebels. I mean, come on, like you're Disney and you're doing that. Like that is so greedy, greedy, so blatantly greedy. And I was really disappointed in that. So I mean, as you said earlier, Brian, Star Wars is on everything. You know, it's not like they're short on income. They've licensed it to every manufacturer under the sun. It's rough. But yeah, in any case, I think this was a real bad move. I think this is a step backwards and I'm really, really worried about one of these shows not making it out of this season. And that would suck because they're all good.
Yeah.
I know. I'm with you. I mean, it's like moment of silence for the loss of a show.
Pour one out for our homies.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
As I like to find something positive in the negative, I do really like how they're handling it with Netflix in that they're making it available a week after the finale.
Sure.
Yeah. That is a good move because it's been kind of tedious. Like for it's a lot of the shows that I watched,
the least they could do though.
Well, yeah, I guess.
They made every episode available 8 days after it aired, that's a little pain in my butt, but that's doable.
Yeah, but you know what? Even if they did that at the mid-season finale, gave you the first half of the season that's a what week they after the mid-season finale.
You know, if they did the mid-season break and then they put that, I would actually be kind of behind that because honestly, I'm not always into the week-to-week trying to watch five shows. You know what I mean? Because I mean, for this show, we generally all try to watch those four shows or some combination of them and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it gets to be a bit much, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On top of whatever else you're interested in watching week to week. So I would kind of be okay with being able to watch half a season all at once, you know, at the mid break point. But I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out.
Well, you can always buy a TiVo and an antenna.
I was going to say I got to clean the headers on the old VCR, but
right, exactly.
CW broadcast on the air.
You can get an HD antenna.
Okay,
in some markets. I mean, in my market here, I don't even think I could pick it up. I might be able to pick it up here in town.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. That's.
Yeah, I know. Not ideal.
Not good.
Oh, right. Well, on that sad note, happy that Emma's back. Yay!
Yay!
Chris has somebody else to pick on. Yay for Klotz. we're still going to have guests on. I mean, I'm looking forward to the next time Travis Jones comes back. I always have a blast when he's on. And we're going to have other things going on. We've got a whole lot of great things in the works as well going forward. So stick around, stay tuned, subscribe, go to iTunes, leave us those messages, blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. Of course, giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, facebook.com/breakingthepanel, yourmomshouse.com/breakingthepanel. You'll find us everywhere is what I'm saying. So tune in again next week as we'll have Brian Abbott to come back and say...
What?
Exactly. What? Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.